I can't help but wonder if maybe I would have understood this movie better about a really well-known writer if I had ever so much as cracked one of his books.
Pedestrian.
But yeah, we're reviewing the end of the tour, which is you know, the main focus is David Foster Wallace, whose book Infinite Jest you could literally kill somebody with.
Oh, yeah.
It's 1,000.
If you Google it, someone
pages.
Probably has.
I'm sure.
With boredom, am I right? No, I'm kidding. I've never read it.
Insert writer suicide joke here.
I was going to say I wasn't going to take it.
I thought I'd leap on that grenade for the two of you. So you're welcome. It's based on real life events. A author named is it David Lipsky. David Lipsky, who is a good writer in his own right.
Yeah, I was familiar with him from Rolling Stone.
Yeah,
so.
He wrote for Rolling Stone for a while, and he's published a couple of novels. He is you know, long story short, he's working for Rolling Stone. He's feeling kind of dissatisfied. He's put out a novel, but it hasn't really gotten a lot of foot.
It's hard for your first novel.
Yeah, it's a first novel, and all of a sudden, David Foster Wallace, and this is 1996, explodes onto the scene, and he's like, this guy is the next, he's the next Hemingway, he's the next, this is the writer that other writers are going to be drawing their influence from for the next, like, 20, 30 years. And so he goes to his bosses at Rolling Stone and says, hey, we haven't interviewed a writer in 10 years. Let me, this guy's finishing up his book tour, he's the hottest thing in the literary scene. Let me spend like his last stop on the tour in Minneapolis him.
Several days of driving and flying and doing being on the tour,
and then no mayhem ensues.
It
is literally two people interviewing kind of each other, because initially he's very starstruck. He admires them, but he's also very jealous of where he is, because he absolutely is where he wants to be. His girlfriend kind of likes David Foster Wallace's writing better than his.
Well,
and,
you know,
yeah, I mean, you know, what are you going to do? So when he gets there, that's where the power struggle kind of goes, and through the course of the film, it seesaws into, you know, who's kind of, you know, in control of the conversation and where it's going.
Yeah, I think you could have called this, like, subtitled, Male Writers Are Very Insecure.
Yeah, and this there's a lot of, the, you know, you could easily go into this and come out going, like, well, that was two bloviating pricks measuring their cocks for the whole movie.
Two guys named Dave.
Yeah.
That's what I would call this
Jason
movie.
Jason Segel playing David Foster Wallace.
Who's amazing.
Who is really breaking out of his mold to do this.
Completely out of his wheelhouse here, and he like, really nails it. I've seen some interviews with Wallace, and he, like, you know, he's not doing an impression or an impersonation. He's, like, channeling the guy very well.
Yeah, and he feels so genuine and real in this.
Yeah.
I mean, flawed as hell.
Mm-hmm.
But like, oh, real. You really believe he is this guy.
Okay, you can make me look like a real dick if you print this.
No, I'm not going to, but if you can, speak into the mic.
Yes, you're performing muscular movements with your hand as you're jerking off, but what you're really doing, I think, is you're running a movie in your head. Mm-hmm. You're having a fantasy relationship with somebody who is not real, strictly to stimulate a neurological response. So look, as the internet grows in the next 10, 15 years, and virtual reality pornography becomes a reality,
mm-hmm.
we're going to have to develop some real machinery inside our guts to turn off pure unalloyed pleasure, or I don't know about you, I'm going to have to leave the planet.
Why?
Because the technology is just going to get better and better, and it's going to get easier and easier and more convenient and more pleasurable to sit alone with images on a screen given to us by people who do not love us but want our money. And that's fine in low doses. But if it's the basic main staple of your diet, you're going to die.
Jesse Eisenberg playing David Lipsky seems a little less comfortable.
A little less, and Eisenberg always seems a little uncomfortable. There's always something a little dislikable about him.
He can't shake the Zuckerberg.
maybe Zack Snyder actually made a good choice in making him Lex Luthor, because maybe he is a supervillain. But he's doing the Eisenberg bit here, and... But the character itself, the one that he's playing, the younger version of himself anyway, who's dealing with conversation, is kind of, you know, he's sticky and he's not you know, maybe not the best guy in the world. He's like, you know, seeing two girls at the same time, and there seems to be a little shadiness there, that it's not really on the up and up with either of them. And
well, there's a lot of like you said, dick measuring going on here in a very neither one of them wants to admit to each other or to themselves that that's what they're doing.
Right.
You know, whereas, like, you know, Jesse Eisenberg is, quite frankly, in total disbelief that this writer who put out this work that he considers to be a masterpiece could possibly have any level of self-doubt or think that anybody else was smarter than him.
And even, you know, I think he's, like, even surprised by the fact that it's just like, why aren't you literally doing backflips down the street?
Right.
Which I don't get. Because what in all of literary history would tell him that a successful, brilliant author would be happy with
himself.
Happy
in their own skin. Right.
You've never met our friend Cargill, have you?
I said brilliant.
That's brilliant.
I'm sorry, I've never met him.
He's a good writer.
He's a very good writer.
I definitely appreciated the acting from Jason Segel in this. I appreciated the quietness of it. I thought that it was very cute that they got along. But the whole time I was thinking, what's the point of this? It's just like, I have a problem with movies that are about smart people just trying to show how smart they are. And that's what this felt like.
Well, yeah, but even more so, two smart people who want to show how smart they are and don't want to admit that that's what they're doing.
Well, and there's, I think, you know, and that's kind of the meta of this is it's very much a treatise on the human need to be genuine, to want what you're presenting to people to be real, and yet at the same time our desire for adulation.
Yeah.
You know, which we will betray, you know, we will betray ourselves all the time if we think that, wait, people will like me more if I do this thing? Okay.
You know, I found a lot more sympathy for David Foster Wallace in this than I did for Lipsky, too.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I could...
And they're two completely different levels of, you know, what they're doing as artists.
In my own limited way, I can identify with both of these characters. Sure. I mean, I get from back at the old Spill days, people are like, I love what you do, and you come up people everywhere, and you're like, I'm a fraud. I hope they never figure it out. You know,
I just ate a tub of Ben and Jerry's in the bathtub. So.
Apparently, you don't know my process, which is eating a bucket of fried chicken in front of a mirror. Going, hey, you like that, fatty?
How did you know? Except for the how do you like that, fatty? I'm just like, man, fried chicken is good.
I would like to point out that Chris has piles of, like, Us Weekly.
Those are not mine.
Oh, yes. Right. I was just like, as Bo was talking, I was like, ooh, Britney's new body. I want to read more about this.
You know what I did just figure out? Dipping fried chicken in Ben and Jerry's might be pretty good. So
ooh,
I'm going to have to try
that.
But no, like, you know, he's... David Foster Wallace, at least this representation of him, he is so genuinely afraid of not being genuine. Yeah. And I can respect that. I've been through that in my own head before where you're like, I want to be a good guy. And the nature of that human animal makes that extremely difficult because we fool ourselves constantly into thinking we're being nice, but we're not being nice.
Yeah.
You know, we're being ultimately selfish.
Yeah,
he's terrified of his own shadow.
Like when he's talking about, there's one where they're kind of talking about, you know, groupies at the book readings, you know, or, you know, and it's all very debased, you know, like, so what about groupies? And Foster's like, I just want them to throw themselves at me so that I don't have to feel that I'm a cad.
Yeah.
At all. Just come to my hotel room and do things to me,
and
then I'll still be a good guy.
That's respectively honest and yet still a cad.
Oh, absolutely.
That,
and
ironically,
that's, there's a lot of this looping of each other where you're like, well, yeah, I see where you're coming from, but then, you know, and that's how the focus shifts from Wallace to Lipsky throughout the entire conversation.
They definitely have this sort of Venn diagram of interlocking circles that keep coming together and then flowing apart, and ultimately finding they're way too much alike to be friends.
Right.
You know, like there's a certain, I guess, respect, grudging respect eventually between
even,
the two.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think grudging, but like, you know, I think they both have pictures of what the other is, and they get very close to getting rid of that picture and coming to the real person, but then towards the end they're just like, no, we're probably better off with just these pictures.
They have those pictures of each other, and I see where Lipsky, obviously he wanted to get like the big story, but why did Foster Wallace want to do the interview? I just didn't get it. He like, so there's a part early on when Jesse Eisenberg is first arriving in Illinois, he calls Jason Segel's character on a payphone. He's like, I'm lost. Where do you live? And Jason Segel's like, lose my number. Okay.
Yeah, like, it would have been nice if there was a publicist character of some kind that was like, no, David, you have to do this, whether you like it or not.
I agree. It was a missing thing that there was no discussion of why he did that. And you can see how that could have been interesting with him going, you know, falling into the whole, I don't want to be a jerk, or I don't want to become J.D. Salinger and think I'm so important.
Yeah.
I refuse to discuss my work. And I figured when Rolling Stone calls, who, as they say early in the film, like, hasn't done an interview with a writer in 10 years.
Let me check this issue of Rolling Stone. Just say that writer
interviews. You know,
is that Kendrick Lamar a writer?
You know, I guess I took away from it that ultimately he does want some human contact, and he did, half of him really wanted to be able to just talk to somebody. And near those points, you're saying, like, when they're just talking about dude stuff, it's clear that he is so much happier.
Yeah.
Like, he even says as much. I love that we're just hanging out, talking about Die Hard or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then he has to be really pushed, even to the point where he's getting angry and irrational when little pieces of his soul start being revealed like that. And I think that irritant is what sets off eventually a sort of destruction of what had started as really kind of a friendship between these two.
Yeah. I've always been wary of, like, you know, the more you learn about the process of you know, the people that interview people for a living for these magazines, like, you know, Esquire, Rolling Stone, or GQ, or what have you, they do these, you know, quote-unquote, very in-depth things where they're hanging out with a person for days. But then you realize, especially if you write, that it's just like, well, they're going to take this experience, but it's just going to be an extension of the writer.
Right.
You know, more than anything else. And you're going to, you know, but they have to mine for those revelatory bits. Like, so what about that whole being addicted to heroin thing? Or what was trying to commit suicide like?
Right.
And some of those are just like, those very stilted moments that Lipsky asks those questions are some of the most interesting points of the film, because the answers that he gets are, you know, they're sometimes bombs.
And I think there's a naivety on both their parts. On Wallace, that he wasn't even going to be asked these questions.
Yeah.
And Lipsky, that maybe this would just come out naturally in conversation in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You get the feeling that maybe Lipsky isn't, in fact, the world's best, like, interview guy.
No.
No, he's not. You know,
maybe he is, in fact, a good at writing 500 words on boy bands, as he said. Like,
you're good, and
eventually a novelist, perhaps. I haven't read his novels either, but he certainly has a hard time working his way through this, and I think that's because, ultimately, he so wants to, despite denials about it later, he so wants to be this man, to the point of even, like, when his girlfriend talks too long on the phone introducing him to David Foster Wallace, he gets wildly jealous on a phone call.
Yeah.
As does Wallace at one point. Jesse Eisenberg is, you know, in my opinion, very definitely flirting with an ex of his, and he just, like, dude, and he gets total bro code in his face.
Yeah.
And you're just like,
oh, isn't that from How I Met Your Mother?
I think that, like, that's the real breaking point there, as Lipsky is like, you know, this guy he's really admired despite seeing all these foibles showing up. That was like the, dude, you're just like a frat boy or something.
Yeah.
You know?
There was a soundbite at the beginning that kind of confused me, and I was waiting for it to come back.
Yeah,
he says, yeah, I was a total jock. But everything else in the film made it seem like, well, he was kind of a loner. He even said, like, towards the end, he spent most of his life in libraries. And it's like, wait, what was this random...
Which isn't true, because he actually was, like, you know, very involved in tennis and almost did go pro and, you know...
So where was that? It's like, that's an interesting personality combination, because an athlete is very different from a loner who spends all his time in a library reading and eventually writing thousands of pages.
I think they were using it to like, you know, to reinforce his, like, no, dude, I'm really a regular guy, and that's really important to me, and regular guys play sports.
So I wonder how much of these conversations were authentic. Like, what was who wrote the screenplay for this?
It's based on the book that Lipsky ended up writing about this, called Although Of Course You End Up Becoming Yourself. And the screenplay was by somebody named Donald Margulies.
And music by Danny Elfman.
You know, he shows up in everything.
That's really
don't really see where that
There was nothing going boop, 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 boop.
Anyway, let's go to final thoughts. Bo, why don't you start this one off?
You know, I definitely went through a lot of my formative years, like, romanticizing writers and you know, wanting to do that. You know, someday I'll run away to a foreign land, and then I'll come back and write the great American novel thing.
In a foreign land.
Yes, that's so many of us. Well, you know, that's what Henry Miller had to, he had to move to Paris to write Cunt. So, as you get older, that gets beaten out of you, if you will. So it was very interesting, because one of the cruxes of this is David Foster Wallace had a small degree of success, and then at 28 he tried to kill himself because he was just like, oh, this isn't working. And then he went on to great success.
And then still killed himself.
Because
so the message there is, kill yourself.
If you're as depressed as David Foster Wallace and you have the most lauded book of the 20th century and you still are down.
Okay, let's all admit, the true story is he was moving some furniture and a copy of one of his books fell on his head.
His wife was embarrassed. No big reveal that I tend to like really artsy fartsy shit, and so I wasn't bored by this. I thought a lot of the conversations about ego, you know, about trying to suppress your desire for fame in order to remain genuine, that rang very true to me. You know, this certainly is not a movie for everybody. If you want robots and explosions and unicorns, steer yourself far, far away from
Where's
this
the
movie.
Unicorn movie?
Yeah!
But if you're a David Foster Wallace fan, go see this two tweet. If you're, you know, just like literature in general, I think this is very interesting to, you know, find out a little bit about the writer's ego. But yeah, all in all, I had a pretty pleasant experience, and there were definitely points that I was very moved. I would give it a good 7 out of 10 bandanas.
Sir?
I went in this not knowing anything about it. I still don't know anything about David Foster Wallace. I mean, no, that's inaccurate. I enjoyed it. It's not something I would seek out. I'm probably never going to read his books because too many pages and not enough zombies.
Or Winchesters.
Or, well, there aren't any books.
There's no books. Yet.
Supernatural doesn't have any books?
Really? It does, but...
Okay.
That's what I thought.
But you have to read those.
For the teen.
And they don't have pictures in them.
For the teen audience.
There is a comic book series.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm sure it's not the same.
Anyway, how did this happen?
Because it always happens.
Well, I didn't bring it up. Jason Segel was a very good person in this acting role that he had. But it was very slow, and coming from someone who enjoyed Terminator Genesis, this probably means nothing, but I didn't really get much from it. It's like, yeah, I know, authors, they're all, like, low confidence, worried about, like, if they're gonna be able to repeat the same amount of critical praise and fame.
Wow.
I kind of agree with her, for the record.
Yeah,
I mean, no, it's true. I mean, yeah. I write.
Yeah.
No. Why are you laughing? I write.
I wasn't laughing at that.
No one's ever going to read what I write.
I've read your writing.
Yeah, my nonfiction.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah,
no
I've,
one's.
I've read some of your nonfiction. And
it was good.
No one's ever going to.
It was, in fact, like, I was a little envious of how good it was, in fact. But well, go ahead. Sorry.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, thank you. Just keep it coming.
By the way, if anybody does find your writing online, please let us know.
Yes. I'll show it to you. You're not going to like it.
All right.
But, yeah, it's... I didn't really see the point in it, and sure. For that, I couldn't fully enjoy it other than as a acting... Like, I enjoyed the acting. That's it. So this was officially the worst comment on an intellectual movie ever. I give it 4 out of 10 500,000 page books.
You know, I would just like to say I did like Terminator Genesis.
So that's 2 million pages. Well.
Terminator Genesis would have been a lot better if David Foster Wallace.
If he just came in and was like... you guys want a soda or something? You want a pop? You want some pop?
Hi, that's Sarah Connor. I really have been wanting to meet you. Oh, this is terrible. Never mind. I'm just...
Oh, that's... Okay. Who was expecting Alanis Morissette to show up?
That they did not have her happen.
Yeah, sorry, spoiler.
It's funny. There's a lot in here that I do identify with, but I felt like if there's a problem, this film just kind of overcycles what it's trying to get across, to the point that by the third act, I was really just kind of getting irritated with both of these people. It's like, again, let's move on.
Yeah.
And I'm comparing this in my head to other conversation films like The Magnificent, My Dinner with Andre,
yeah.
Or Richard Linklater's Before,
or Coffee After, and Cigarettes.
Whatever, or Sunrise, or Coffee and Cigarettes. I don't think this is good as those films.
No.
I really don't. And one of the reasons is, yes, it's kind of stuck on a... You know, the needle keeps skipping. It keeps coming back to the same stuff. And by an hour in, we get it.
Yeah.
You know, but it does have the strong thing of, like I said, Jason Segel's performance, which is really just kind of remarkable. It really brings you into this more than any other aspect of this film. I do think that it's overlong, too. At 106 minutes, there's long points. You're like, we don't really need this filler material that's happening here with the shots or what have you.
Pulling out of driveways?
Pulling out of the long pulling out of driveway sequence. But I did overall get enjoyment out of this. I certainly thought their conversation is interesting. Mm-hmm. It just maybe needed to go somewhere. I like felt yeah. very.
I thought the like when he comes into the bedroom at the end, I got a little catharsis.
They
there.
They certainly concluded bits of it, but yeah. I thought overall mm-hmm. the film felt, the conversation and the film even felt a little unrounded off at the edges, like in a way that perhaps it should have yeah. been just a little bit more.
No,
especially considering it starts with him going, "Hey, don't you know David Foster Wallace? He killed himself." And that really doesn't come up again.
And once again, this might be a limitation, the fact that this is actually based on real shit.
Yeah.
And there's
yeah.
only a certain amount of rabbit holes that can go down.
True.
Yes, he called me weeping on the ledge, and I said, do it! Do it!
He held me. No, as Alan Moore has often said, never marry a writer, because they'll just spend 3 days telling you what a fucking utter hack they are, and then they'll spend the next 3 days following you around, showing what they've just wrote, reading the best bits.
And then the 3 days after that, being upset that you did not show the proper amount of adulation
exactly.
for what they wrote.
Why do you hate me?
You didn't like it on Facebook!
But I give this 6.5 out of 10 David Foster Wallace books I probably should have read by now.
You're never going to read
well,
it.
Well, I say half because I don't know anyone who actually finished Infinite Jest, so...
There,
I do.
Yeah.
He wrote a great story about actually going on a cruise called A Supposedly Fun Thing I'll Never Do Again, which is well worth reading.
I will say that, his name, his full name, David Foster Wallace. He's a loner who doesn't really trust people, who lives by himself, and writes lots of self-involved, depressing stuff.
Oh, my God.
He was either going to become an author or kill the president.
That's what they should have made this movie about.
Yeah, and then he killed Ronald Reagan, who's already dead.
He was president in the 90s. Wait.